Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, everyone. Today we have both Mona and Rebecca in the studio. Mona, Rebecca, hi.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark. Nice to hear from you.
Good being on here again.
Yeah, and Mona, it's always great to talk to you as always, but Rebecca, long time no here. Glad to have you back and talking in the studio.
Well, Mark, she's never off the scene. She's always there in the background. But we just had a lot of guests lately, and we do have a lot of guests moving forward. But today's topic, we thought that because we are such experts in this area, that we thought we would just handle it ourselves.
That's right. I know today we're going to be talking about EB5 global market and cross-chargeability. And again, I'm happy to have Rebecca in the studio with us. She's not walking by the glass window there looking in like, aw, she's here.
Thank you, Mark.
So, Mark, about two, 3 weeks ago when we were at the IIUSA annual meeting in D.C., we, of course, met with Charlie Oppenheim, who's the chief of the Department of State, who had given all these figures as to what's going on with visas, etc. And Rebecca and I had put out an article. Well, that article, the blog piece, we've had so many people coming back to us with misconceptions, and there has been so many spin-offs, not just from our article, but from Charlie's piece, that we felt that we really need to discuss this. We wanted to discuss what exactly we meant by retrogression and backlog, as well as discuss the whole issue of cross-chargeability, as EB5 is a global market.
Yes, I think it's very important. I think a lot of people get nervous when they hear retrogression. Mm-hmm. And I think it's used interchangeably with backlog. And
well, I agree. People really don't know the difference between backlog and retrogression.
Exactly. So it scares a lot of people off. You know, backlog, it's really a backlog right now. What China and Vietnam is right now in a backlog as well. The only two countries in EB5 that are backlog. So, Mark, as we were discussing, you know, we said it's a global market, you know, but what we hear a lot is about, you know, used to be all about China. And lately, Mona, right, we're hearing all about India.
All about India, yeah. But I think it's also important for listeners to understand what we mean by global EB5 market. And I think perhaps, Rebecca, the best way to describe this is to really partition the world. So we did. We partitioned the world and we clumped the whole world into segments. One of the segments
which is close to home is Latin America.
And Latin America, of course, is very popular right now, from Brazil all the way down to Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela, in fact, all of those Latin American countries. Then for Asia is a little more complex. So we divided Asia into three. We have Central Asia, which consists of the Russian countries, the former Soviet Union countries like Uzbekistan and Turkestan, Kazakhstan.
All the stans.
Well, not quite all the stans, because you have a stan in Southeast Asia.
That's true. So in Southeast Asia, we have Pakistan. Then it also includes Bangladesh, India, countries as that.
And Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
And then you have East Asia. And East Asia, of course, is China, Japan, Taiwan, Korea.
Hong Kong.
Where would Malaysia fit in, Becca?
We would probably put that in Southeast Asia.
I think so. Yes. Yep. Malaysia and Thailand, I think they would fit in Southeast Asia. In addition to that, we have what we called EMA, and we didn't make that up. That actually is a term which states Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And for Europe, Middle East, and Africa as a word basically for the immigration side. Mm-hmm. And Europe is a hub. We'll discuss that a little later about what a hub is, what isn't, and what, you know, developers when they're looking for marketing areas. areas why mm-hmm. they should go to hubs.
And last but not least, we also have, surprisingly, many people don't think we get investors, but we get investors from Australia and New Zealand as well.
A lot from Australia and New Zealand.
Yes, exactly. So,
in fact, just the same way that we get an awful lot of investors from the United Kingdom, we get a lot from Australia and New Zealand. So it's actually the same little spin of people.
Exactly. So there we go. We have created now our global market.
Shout out to all the listeners in Australia. Of course, while you're going through the EB5 global market, I'm looking at the stats of EB5 Investment Voice, and I'm looking at where are people listening from? Where are these countries? And of course, you mentioned Australia as an afterthought, but they're actually our number 10 country as far as in terms of people listening to the show. So they may be small in the, or maybe not, I don't know, in the global EB5 market, but they're definitely active listeners. Where would South Africa fall in as far as the global EB5 market?
I think we would probably at this point just keep them in the EMA, which is Europe, Middle East, and Africa, just because there's nowhere else to put them unless we had to make another partition for that. But EMA, like NEMA, is actually North Africa. It's not really South Africa. But, I mean, for purposes of EB5, why not? We can make up a new definition. So,
right. And the only reason I bring it up is there's a lot of people in South Africa listening. Obviously, not as much as China, Japan, India, Hong Kong, but more than Australia. So I was just wondering where they kind of fit in.
Right. Well, this is the big issue, Mark. Now, for example, we have a lot of South African clients, but many of them have Indian passports, for example.
Exactly. So we get that around. And I think that's the confusing part. People always think, we have USCIS is based on country of birth, right? But what people don't realize is that we're having clients from all over the world. A lot of Indians live in UAE. We have a lot of clients from Australia and New Zealand. We have, as Mona mentioned, South Africa. So there are expats all around the world.
So really, when we talk about cross-chargeability, which we're going to discuss shortly, is directly relevant to this whole EB5 market that we are actually currently living in. But before we even get to cross-chargeability, Rebecca, we really have to clear the air, the big elephant in the room, retrogression and backlogs.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people get nervous when they hear the word retrogression. And it's very important to distinguish between retrogression and backlog. Right now, EB5 for China and Vietnam, both countries are in a backlog at this moment.
They're the only two countries in backlog, right?
Exactly. Yes. So backlog means that they have a priority date that they have to have a current priority date in order to file for their green card. So at this moment, that date is for June 2018, anyone with a priority date of August 1st, 2014 can file a petition to get their green card.
Now, Rebecca, people are confused. You know how many times we've answered this question. People say, does that mean I have to wait before I can file my 526 EB5 petition?
No. You can file your EB5 petition, your I-526 petition. You don't have to wait for that date to be current. You want to file as soon as you can because you want to get in that line as fast as possible, because when your priority date becomes current, you could get your green card faster that way. So you don't have to wait.
So what is a final action date? We keep talking about FADs.
So a final action date is the end of a current visa status for a country. So that's where it's indicating a backlog. So that's when you have your first final, your backlog, basically. Retrogression, then it becomes retrogression because that's when your final action date starts to go backwards in time instead of moving forward. So fortunately right now, even though it's very slow, China and Vietnam are progressing. They are moving forward. They've moved a week forward.
So they're not in retrogression?
They're not in retrogression at this point.
Okay. So, but for people who understand, maybe the lawyers on listening, who understand EB2s and EB3s, EB2 has been in retrogression.
Yes.
So especially that has, for India.
Exactly. So that has retrogressed for Indians, has retrogressed back to 2008.
Which means it's gone backwards every year.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. And now we've actually hit a backlog for EB1 as well for Indians. We've now hit a backlog in 2012. So we are seeing backlogs and retrogression in EB1, EB2, and EB3 categories for India and China.
Right. And also, we are following Charlie's wonderful elucidations of these, we are looking to see backlogs in other countries.
Yes, unfortunately. So EB5 is becoming very popular. And so now we're going to see a backlog in India next year. Earliest, I think he said June of 2019, we'll see a backlog for India.
Does that mean that in June 2019, anyone who files in June 2019 will actually face the backlog? Or I think it could mean something
else. It could mean earlier. So yes. You have to, you know, he said there will be a backlog of June 2019, but that doesn't mean June 2019 is going to be the actual backlog date. Right. So it could go back to September of 2018, or it could go back to maybe a point earlier.
But with the Chinese backlog, mm-hmm. that was announced in May of 2016. Rebecca, they went back all the way to May 2014.
Exactly. And since then, we haven't seen much of a progression. We're only at August of 2014 at this time.
But I don't think it's likely that India will go back 2 years.
I don't think so either. So for India, the new fiscal year will start. So we'll get another batch of visas that will come in. And then after that, the flow of visas will follow in, and then you'll have a slow backlog, but you'll probably pick up after that.
Right. And other than India, we're also looking at backlogs in Brazil, mm-hmm. South Korea, Taiwan, and which is interesting because a lot of people think Taiwan is China. Well, no, mm-hmm. it's not. Taiwan has its separate quota, but now they're looking at backlogs. Do we know what date those countries are going to be backlogged?
So those dates we're seeing backlogs, those are possibly in the summer of 2019.
Right. This is all fluid. And if there is a change in some of the counting processes or the pushing that we're trying to, a lot of this EB-5 practitioners and stakeholders are doing with Congress, if that works and we, for example, get dependents taken out mm-hmm. of the quota, then all of these numbers will change.
Exactly. So that's important to note that dependents do count towards the visa quota number. So it's not like unlike other visas where it's just the one application. No, it includes the entire family.
Right. So, Rebecca, we have a couple who came in to see us. They moved to the United Kingdom when they were 3 years old. They happened to be born in India, but they're British as far as they understood. They went to school, grew up. Mm-hmm. Why can't they file as a British person? They only have British passports.
So unfortunately, your country's citizenship is generally has no impact on chargeability. So it has to be on your country of birth. So if you're born in India, that's the country we have to use for EB-5 purposes.
So the argument that a lot of people who are selling Caribbean passports won't hold in the United States. So if I go out and I get a passport from St. Kitts and Nevis, I can't file as a St. Kitts and Nevis number, can I?
Unfortunately, no. So your passport doesn't count. You better get that birth certificate ready. So what's good, though, is that it's not dependent on the petitioner himself either or herself. It could also be what we call cross-chargeability.
Aha! I know, Mark, you were saying cross-charger what?
Yeah, I was waiting for it to come in.
So
I know it isn't a term which is used often, I think, Rebecca, right? That's probably why you haven't heard of it, Mark.
Exactly. First for me.
Yeah, so I think this is where I think our audience will benefit because they don't understand what cross-chargeability means. And what that means is that you can actually use your spouse's country of birth, which is interesting because we have a lot of couples out there that have spouses that were born in other countries. So if for China, like for instance, I have a client, the petitioner was born in China, but his spouse was born in Hong Kong, and Hong Kong is not counted in mainland China's backlog. So we're able to get their visa faster because his spouse was born in Hong Kong.
Now, we have seen, though, some people trying to use cross-chargeability from a child which is born in countries, like, for example, a couple who had a child born in South Africa, and they were trying to use that country's quota. It doesn't work in that case, does it?
It does not work. So, unfortunately, cross-chargeability is only for your spouse. It does not work for children.
No, so it doesn't work for dependents.
Yes. What's good to know is that we do have a lot of clients from, for instance, from the UAE.
That's right.
And so, as many know that UAE doesn't give you citizenship. So we have a lot of Indian clients that have lived in the UAE for the last 20, 30 years. A lot of our clients filed the EB-5 petition for their children. Now, if your child was actually born in the UAE, it means that they will have an Indian passport, but they were actually born in the UAE. We can actually use their birth from the UAE, even though they're Indian citizens.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know that.
Exactly. So it's an interesting topic. I don't think it's spoken enough about, and I think a lot of people just have misconceptions about that as well.
So when do we actually use the whole cross-chargeability argument? Do we do it right at the beginning when we're filing the petition, the 526 petition, or is it at a later stage?
So that will be at the later stage. What I think a lot of people kind of don't understand either is that the I-526 petition is really to see the USCIS really wants to see your source of funds and the project information. So the information about you and your family comes in at the second stage, whether when you're filing for adjustment of status, or if you're outside of the United States, then you're going to go through consular processing. So that's where the attorneys come in, and they will indicate to the consulate or the office here in the U.S. that we will be using cross-chargeability.
Mark, when we have guests on the show, of course, a lot of the times we have developers, they're really only interested in up to the 526. After the 526, a lot of people, a lot of developers just fall off the planet because they don't know, they don't care. But we have countless stories of problems and issues at the consulate mm-hmm. and, you know, at this stage moving forward. Again, other than backlogs and cross-chargeability issues, we have other problems at the consulate.
Yes. We have a lot of problems at the consulate. Before we go into that, Mona, we're talking all this. We're talking about how do we know all of this? What do we? Where do we get this information from? We're not just good, you know, Mark, like that. We have to get the information from somewhere.
Well, I know we're smart, Rebecca, and I know we do a lot of research, but actually, where we get this information from about cross-chargeability, it all comes from the adjudicator's field manual, the what's called the AFM, which are basically guidelines which are detailed by USCIS. Why is that significant? Well, I feel that as they are guidelines, it's regs, they can be adjusted and changed. And perhaps we need a lawsuit. Maybe we should have Ira back on. Ira Kuzman, if you're listening, we've got a new area for you. No, joking aside. So the adjudicator's field manual is something which is produced by USCIS. And if in the future it does come to a point, Rebecca, that it is really unfair to keep counting countries if you've lived maybe 30, 40 years in another mm-hmm. country, it could be a possibility exactly. for change.
Exactly. So it's important to note that these are just guidelines. So as Mona mentioned, these we can change this. We can hopefully hope for the best and yeah. be able to change it for the better.
So it's not actually in any law per se, but it's in a regulation.
Yes.
Right.
But until it is in a law, the regulations really what counts. And the consulate do follow their rules and regulations to a T, actually.
Yes, yes.
Has the adjudicator's field manual, has it always been public? I think I remember a story that somebody had to submit a Freedom of Information Act just to even get the adjudicator's field manual disclosed. And then that's when everyone got that information. Is that right?
That was a long time ago, Mark. You're right.
I'm that old.
But
oh,
yeah, but no. Well, we've been practicing for a long time. But no, the AFM is public. It's information out there for everybody. We have a bazillion copies.
We have a billion copies in our office.
I imagine you do.
Yeah. No, it is useful to know that a lot of these rules and regulations come to this because immigration and especially EB-5 is a little different from other areas where you can always rely on statute and going to the Court of Appeals. And if something is very unfair, some judge, some place at some mm-hmm. circuit will make a ruling and things can be changed. That happens in immigration law all the time. But EB-5 is so governed by regulations, it seems very harsh in some ways.
Well, thank you for explaining cross-chargeability. I want to go back to the global EB-5 market, and specifically, I want to look at it with a developer focus. How does an EB-5 developer become aware and get access to this EB-5 global market? I realize marketing and outreach is changing.
Yeah, marketing in EB-5 has changed. If you remember, this is what, our 63rd or 64th podcast, but in our early podcast, we did a lot of podcasts relating to marketing, and we discussed China. Mm-hmm. Whereas, yes, unfortunately, the market has changed, and we do talk about the rest of the world, which is why we talk about the EB-5 global market. And it is hard to know where to start. As we've already mentioned, Rebecca, we have Indian nationals, for mm-hmm. example, from South Africa, from the UK, from...
New Zealand. It's really hard working with clients from New Zealand because they're like 26 hours ahead of us.
I know. We really have to do the early nights and and late mornings.
Exactly. You know, it's interesting because, again, everyone went into China was such a market where you had your agents and everyone knew where they were going, what they were doing. And because of the slowdown in the China market now, I mean, it's still going. We're still seeing investors from China, but it's not up to where it was before. So now people are confused. So they're taking that same mentality that they had in China and they're trying to bring it into these other countries.
And it's not working.
Exactly. So we've seen that in India.
Yeah. No, there is a huge difference between India and China. They might be two countries with 2 billion people, but they're not the same in any shape or form. China is way more sophisticated on the immigrant situation than India is, which is surprising because India being a colony and people have migrated from India for many years, but not in the same way they've done from China.
Exactly. So China, you know, became, they got a head start basically. And you know, we're well educated in EB-5 from how long now? And I think that's where India's getting there. They're getting a lot of information about EB-5, but it's slowly getting there. There's a lot of still, again, wrong information that's going out there. And so it's educating the market. And Indians are, I feel, are harder to get.
I think it's because for most Indians, they do have a very good understanding of the English language. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's too much information. And then they come to us with after speaking to 3 or 4 different developers with these complex issues and questions, and I'm like, you don't really need to know that. But in any event, it's always good to have a good detailed knowledge. But as far as as a developer is concerned, Rebecca, they want to go out, they want to find investors. How do they do it in this EB-5 global market? Well, we've always said, begin with your hubs.
Exactly. So there are several major hubs out there. And Mona can, you know, she knows all the major hubs.
All right. So let's go through. You know them too, because we've been to almost every one of them over and over. So of course, one of the major hubs that we deal with is Dubai.
Exactly.
And Dubai is a real hub because that it has everybody from all over the world. Mm-hmm. I think there's more Russian business happening in Dubai than there is in Moscow at times.
So you get everyone in Dubai, you know, it's UAE. But you get everyone from the Middle East. You get everyone coming in from North Africa.
From Iran.
Exactly.
From Turkey, from mm-hmm. Egypt, from Jordan, from Syria, yep. From the UK, from everywhere.
From everywhere. I mean, how many times we've gone and we've seen such a mixture. You know, you have your Indians, your, you know, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis. Everyone is in, if you like, is in Dubai.
Yeah, because these countries, not just Dubai, but also Qatar, mm-hmm. 70% of these countries are expats. Exactly. Who've been living there and working there. And what is the advantage, though, of going into Dubai for somebody who's been, you know, for a developer who does go into these countries? I think they need to have an understanding of the type of person who's lived in Dubai may have come there for work purposes, but cannot stay there.
Yeah, so there's no permanency when they come to UAE or, mm-hmm. in all these countries. So for an Indian national to come to UAE, they've been living there for 20, 30 years, but there's no permanency. They won't get the passport and they can't really settle. And especially for those who have children, they're looking to, you know, find somewhere. So the U.S. has become very popular for that because then they can settle here. They can get their passports eventually.
So other than Dubai, we have other hubs. Obviously, as I said, Dubai is an obvious hub, but there are some other places which are not so obvious. And of course, one of them is London. Yes. So London is your international financial center, but it's also a hub for Europe, Middle East, Africa, and the EMA countries, as we discussed before. And if you want to really go into any of the EMA countries, Europe, Middle East, and Africa, then London is a good place to start.
Mona, though, we have all these expats, but we also have nationals from Europe. Why would a European want to come to the US?
Oh, there are many reasons why Europeans want to come here. Often, you know, you have, for example, maybe Wall Street executives or maybe other professionals who want to just try a different market or know that they have a higher income ability here. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, there's reasons like the weather. There's reasons like family want to be mm-hmm. here. America's one of those areas that I believe that you all will always attract from Europe, which leads me to another hub, which is Moscow. Now, Moscow is one of those places that you don't really think of a hub. But remember when, right at the beginning, when we were discussing our EB-5 markets, we had Central Asia? Well, Moscow is your hub for Central Asia. If you want to do business in any of these states, something or another ends up happening in Moscow. So we mm-hmm. find that Moscow is a good place also to be if you want to try and find investors.
So as Mona mentioned, the Moscow market is a great place to start. But we've advised that maybe you should take a Russian speaker. We found that it's easier to communicate. I mean, a lot of them do speak English and have no issues, but it just becomes, I think they become more comfortable once you have someone who speaks the language.
Yes, and which is different again from Dubai and London.
Exactly.
And also different from the other hub, which is Singapore.
Yeah. So Singapore, you get, it's a major financial center as well. And it's a hub for the South Asia, East Asia, and Australia, New Zealand markets.
Yeah, I think Singapore is more, if you want any body from the Australian, New Zealand market, you're more likely to get them from the Singapore than maybe from the other hubs.
Exactly. So Singapore is a country where you get a diverse, you have people from China, you have people from India, you have people from Australia, New Zealand. So they have a very diverse, and there's a lot of expats who live in Singapore. We ourselves have seen that. We've had a lot of Indian-born clients who lived many years in Singapore and then came here on the EB-5 program to the U.S.
Right. And then again, going back to our cross-chargeability, they have children born in Singapore.
Yeah, exactly. So they're able to use that. And fortunately for them, India wasn't in nowhere near a fair backlog back then. But for those going in now, if you're looking for your children or your spouse is born, you might want to look into that. Or for our Indian investors, we advise that you hurry up and file for EB-5.
Well, I'm really loving this discussion on the global EB-5 market and the various hubs. Honestly, I'm looking at a world map as you're discussing these because I'm American. I was born here. So sometimes there's Atlanta, there's New York, and there's other cities. But I'm like, oh, where are these places? So I'm looking at a global map and I'm visioning, okay, I can see how that's a hub for Europe. I can see how Moscow is a hub for Central Asia. Let me ask you about Latin America. We mentioned at the top of the show that Latin America market is hot and very much interested in EB-5. Where's their hub?
That's a very good question. I don't believe there is a central hub in the same way there is a central hub in the other markets that we've mentioned.
Oh, okay.
For Brazil, for example, you do go to Sao Paulo and maybe Rio. But for the other areas, it is the capital cities, but there really isn't a hub per se.
No, I think with the Latin America market, I think the language is very important. You know, having that Spanish language, it makes investors feel more comfortable. I think what most people do is they go to the major cities in each country and they will attract those from the countries themselves. So there's, as Mona said, there's no actual major hub for everyone to come in from.
There's also another reason there isn't, is that the reason often for migrating from a country like Singapore or Dubai may be because your children want to go to university. Whereas with the Latin American countries, it's a little different. The whole family might want to come because of violence and problems within the country.
So you mentioned for our listeners in Australia that there's a hub in Singapore that's relatively close. But let's go back to the listeners in South Africa, which may not seem like a very large area, but obviously we have a lot of listeners in that country for whatever reason. Hi. So would they need to go? Was their closest hub all the way up in Dubai?
Well, we have met with South Africans in Dubai, but I do believe, and also the UK.
Yes.
That's where, again, London comes into it. The UK has a special relationship with South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay. Oh, yes.
Don't forget, colonialism, Mark.
Yeah. you said that, and all of a sudden, my mouth went shut. Like, yes, okay, special relationship, if that's what we're going to call it.
Right. No, because all the colonies became the Commonwealth.
Right.
And then the Commonwealth countries do have that connection with London. Again, that's one of the reasons why people don't realize that London is such a good hub.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you for slapping that across my face. You're absolutely right now that you bring that up, and it seems apparent. I was just thinking geographically, not so much of colonial outreach and where these populations came from originally, which kind of goes back into what we were talking about as far as the cross-chargeability, the differences between the country of birth, country of citizenship, and maybe even country of origin. Well, this has been a treat with both Mona and Rebecca. Thank you so much. You're talking about the global EB-5 market and the cross-chargeability. You know, speaking of the global EB-5 market and those hubs and how London has a broad outreach, you're going to be in London in June of 2018, right?
That's right.
Yes, Mark. We're actually co-hosting an event that's taken place in London on June 21st and June 22nd. So we would invite anyone who's listening to come out and meet us.
Yeah, not only are you going to have a booth, but from what I hear, there's probably going to be a podcast pavilion. I'm sure that if somebody has questions that they want to get on EB5 Investment Voice, find Mona, find Rebecca, and ask her question. You may hear your question on this show later with an in-depth answer.
Right. So look out for more information. And if any other questions, have people contact us.
That's right, Rebecca. And what we'll do to make it easier is we're going to put a link in the show notes up on the website on mshawlaw.com, as well as embed that in the podcast player. So if you want to find more about where Mona and Rebecca and the rest of the Mona Shaw and Associates team are going to be in London at this BLS event, open up your podcast player, look at those notes. We'll put a link in it right there.
Great. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshawlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.